And joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you for joining us as always. We saw a report on USA Today saying that the Tennessee Titans were one of several teams that had kicked the tires on Kansas City Chiefs cornerback L'Jarius Sneed. Of course, the Chiefs have tagged him, but they said, hey, feel free to go seek a trade. What do you think the going rate will be, the asking price will be for L'Jarius Sneed?
Oh, wow. Listen, I think the asking price for an elite corner is going to be, you know, and presumably, you know, what Sneed would obviously want would be, and you say asking price, like, right, to kind of reset the cornerback market. So you're going to pay top dollar on a long-term deal for, you know, one of the better corners in the league. And then, you know, the team compensation and the trade portion of it is obviously, I guess, probably first round plus is what you're probably talking about. And so when you look at that, it's a hefty price tag, but it's for a proven player. And so I think that's typically how those things work. And, you know, unless the player is in a situation where he's just completely adamant about not playing on the tag, which it really usually boils to the point where it doesn't financially make sense for somebody to make that type of demand and actually sit out. But if it's just going to be such discontent that kind of forces your hand as a team to move a player. And so, look, I don't know if that's the case or if that's where it's headed with Sneed, but I would think that all those other pieces would have to be in place for a team like the Chiefs to make a move.
First round pick. Woo.
I mean, I think, like, look, I mean, and I don't know, but like, it feels like that's what it would be. I mean, right? Yeah. I mean, you had an elite corner that's still relatively young, and you know, you have him under contract for at least a year. So, I mean, I would think that that's what you would want.
I'm sure that's going to be Kansas City's asking price. Hey, you want an elite corner, you're going to have to pay for it. Tim Hasselbeck is with us, kind of looking on the defensive side of the ball. Christian Wilkins was not franchise tagged by the Miami Dolphins. I saw a projected contract to be around $17 million per. That feels low, Tim, for a defensive tackle of Christian Wilkins' caliber. I don't think he's going to get $30 million Aaron Donald, Chris Jones money, but that is one that I do believe that the Tennessee Titans should be kicking the tires on. What kind of player would the Tennessee Titans potentially get should they kick the tires, and what do you think the going rate for Christian Wilkins would be?
Yeah, if that report is out there, chances are, you know, that it's probably relatively accurate. I would not think that was a team link or leak or, you know, speculation on the contract just because of, you know, how things are playing out in Miami with that. And so with that, you know, you would have to guess that that's maybe an agent leak. And so my guess would be that that's maybe the range-ish, you know, and obviously the details of it, but I think he's a really good player. I think as you look at interior defensive linemen, guys that can impact the game, I think he's on a pretty short list of somebody that does that. So I would think that the market would be strong for him. And look, he might be in a situation where, you know, he's letting things play out a little bit with, you know, with what else happens, like with Chris Jones or, you know, other guys at that position that may be up, that may be signing deals, it maybe makes sense for him to have a little patience through the process of it to see where the market goes.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. First, I want to congratulate you on hiring your brother Matthew to be the OC. But this is what I want to know before I get into my question about the draft. So is this the beginning of, like, the Tim Hasselbeck tree? Are we going to be talking about the Tim Hasselbeck tree?
Oh, wow.
Once you guys win about two or three championships, is Matthew going to be looking to take over somewhere else? And now we've opened up the tree of Tim Hasselbeck?
I mean, I'm, you know, as my dad played for Bill Parcells. And so because I think if you I mean, if you're not concerned about adding really good coaches around you and then understanding that they may leave to go be successful somewhere else, you know, like, and then also knowing that there are a lot of guys out there that know a heck of a lot more than me, and so I'm good with those guys. You know? You look really smart by having really smart, good people around you. So, listen, don't be fooled. Now, I'm just glad you asked me that and didn't ask me if, like, we were going to be riding, like, a tandem bike to school together.
Yeah, because you don't live too far from it now.
You can pack each other's lunches, Tim.
Exactly.
That would be – imagine the social media. Imagine the social media for that.
Who's going to pick up who? Like, does Matthew come and pick you up, or do you pick him up?
When Rex and Rob Ryan were coaching together, they rode a tandem bike to training camp one year. I forget where it was.
That is precious.
And so when Matthew joined ESPN, they were like, hey, let's do a little spoof like the Ryan brothers did and have you guys ride a tandem bike. And I don't know how it happened, but somehow I ended up on the back. There is nothing worse than being the guy riding in the back on a tandem bike. Because a couple of things happened. One, the guy up front isn't pedaling. So you're doing all the work. And then the guy up front steals. Like, you have handlebars when you're in the back that don't do anything. So it's like, this is the most helpful, demeaning spot to be in. So so if we ever did that again, no, I got shotgun. I'm right there.
Well, congratulations on the hiring of your brother to be the OC over there. I know you guys will put together a really good team and ultimately win a championship there, multiple state championships there with the Innsworth Tigers. Now, looking at this year's draft, everyone, Tim, if you look at just about every mock draft, there's some similarities, but then there's some differences as well. Do you expect the top five or top six to go as we have seen in many mock drafts? Because if you look at the top five, I think across the board, there may be some differences here and there, but majority of the guys that are in the top five, top six of the mock drafts are mock drafts across the board. But do you see a change, or do you see something happening within that first four or five picks that can kind of throw the whole draft off?
You know, something to be amazed, I kind of do. When everybody is in such unison on this stuff, it usually makes me feel like, you know, they're just, I don't know, maybe a lot of people are listening to the same people, right, that are talking. And it feels like there's movement when we get to the draft based on, you know, that just looks different than the mock drafts. And I think sometimes if we look back and say, like, well, did it really change? Like, was there movement, or was everyone just slightly off, you know, the whole way? And I think I've told you guys a story. Like, I talked to somebody that I considered, like, to be really close with, thought that, like, he, you know, and I wasn't doing mock drafts. Like, he told me something one time, and the draft rolls around, and I was like, dang, like, that hurt my feelings. I was like, you just lied to me about what you guys were doing with the draft. But here's what I think, and obviously, like, I've talked to you guys about this and have said so on other shows as well, like, I think Drake May is the best quarterback in this group. And I think there are really good quarterbacks in this group. Do I think that there probably are other people that see the quarterback situation maybe more similar to the way I see it versus how it's being represented in these mock drafts? I do, because I just feel like I've been doing this enough and watching guys enough and learned enough about these guys that, like, not everybody's going to evaluate quarterbacks the same. Like, that is for sure. But this guy possesses so many things that you would want out of that position that no matter how much you like Jaden Daniels or no matter how much you like Caleb Williams, Drake May is checking so many boxes that there are going to be guys that – prefer Drake May. They just are. And so to shake things up at the top of the draft, yeah, look, where he goes, I think would shake things up, considering a lot of people don't have him going in the top two. And a lot of people have talked about maybe he doesn't go to three at three, and maybe three moves and someone else comes up to three and takes him or somebody else. So yeah, I do think that there'll be movement. I don't think it'll play out. And I do think that some of that will be reflected in mock drafts between now and draft day.
So, Tim, you've been high on Drake May ever since the beginning of the football season. Mm-hmm. And I have heard a lot of rumors, gossip out of the combine that Drake May's stock could be slipping. Now, this is an if, a huge if. If Drake May's stock does slip and he falls to 7 to the Tennessee Titans, should the Titans take him?
100%. 100%. I'm telling you what, if his stock is slipping at the combine, I'd like to know what for. I mean this. Like, in terms of, like, I mean, so size, athleticism, arm strength, and then the interview process. You guys, you know, I've had, you know, I called his first start, and I've called his, I guess it would have been his last game against NC State this past season because he didn't play in the bowl game. Like, I had him a number of times, had him in production meetings a number of times. He's going to be super impressive in the interview process. Like, so to me, when I hear, like, hey, his stock is dropping, like, that feels like it has to be smokescreen to me. It has to be. Because, like, I've sat there and, I've experienced what the interview process would seem like with him. And I don't think that there are going to be teams that walk away from interacting with him and think that guy can't be a franchise quarterback. That would be the most unlikely scenario that I could imagine. So Caroline, I really feel like, you know, maybe like it happened to CJ Stroud, where like it seemed like there were bad reports leading up to the draft. And maybe that's why he didn't go as high as many people maybe thought that he could have or should have. So that's what that feels like to me if you know, that is what the buzz is.
That is interesting to think back on all that stuff about Stroud right before the test, you know, the Nashville-based guys, the S2. That was quite the firestorm, and it did not – it seems crazy to think that happened because of how well Stroud is playing. But let me ask you about another guy, Tim, because – this is another thing that people start speculating is when there's always a quarterback that shoots up the board. I know you didn't see him as closely as you saw Drake May, but what do you think of J.J. McCarthy as a pro prospect?
Here's what I would say about McCarthy. I think McCarthy's physical ability and athleticism is first-round talent, right? I think that, you know, he's weathered the storms of competition, being at Michigan with other good players, playing in that environment that is absolutely a, like, that is a plus in a big, big way. I've talked to you guys a lot about how much football have you played, what's the environment been like. That, like, that's a really good aspect to the evaluation process of J.J. McCarthy in his favor. And I think that there's also a competitive and mental toughness about him that is something that everybody would love, that I think oftentimes probably gets overlooked a little bit in this process. Now, I would say, do I think that as a passer that he's had moments of inaccuracy and that make you say, like, there are other guys I just feel like in the passing game operate more efficiently. I would feel that way about him. Now, in fairness to that, well, he didn't play in an offense that, you know, was conducive to, hey, if you missed a throw, you had the ability, you know, 7 more times because of how you played offense to come back and, you know, to come back and make 3 more plays that to make up for that miss. So I do think that there's an element of that, in fairness to him, like when you miss a throw, like, hey, can you come back and do that? Where, like, Caleb Williams had all kinds of chances like that.
So, Tim, one more for you. What do you think is next for Russell Wilson? And if you're out there and you've seen what's happened, right? It's been so loud. It just didn't fit all these bad things you heard about Russell Wilson to the point where, like, you're trying to remember back in the day where he was, like, the model guy playing for winners and winning a Super Bowl, almost winning a second straight Super Bowl, which is rarefied air. So what do you see from him going forward, and what's he worth?
So I think he might be done playing football. And I said this a while back. And here's why I say it. At the end of this season, if he literally sits on his couch from today to the end of the season, he will have made $300 million playing football. That would put him as the fourth highest earner in the history of the National Football League. Okay? So my question is, why would Russell Wilson go sign with the Steelers for league minimum, make $1.1 million, and not have the financial security of, hey, if you're not playing well, we can't turn on you and just decide to bench you and go play, you know, Kenny Pickett or someone else? So I just don't know why. Like, I don't know that he'll take that chance. I don't know that he would do that. And some people say, well, we're going to find out how much he loves the game. I think it's more than that. I think you can love the game and say, like, I might be putting myself in an embarrassing situation. So I just – guys that have been to the top of the mountain the way that Russell Wilson has been to the top of the mountain, that have made that kind of money, they don't sign places to, like, compete for a job. They just – I mean, just don't. Like, I don't – like, find someone who's done that in the history of the NFL. Like, I don't know that there is one.
Yeah, I can remember Cam Newton's, disbelief, really, when he was cut by Carolina, and there weren't teams lining up for him to start, and he ends up in New England. That's a little bit similar, right, of what Russell Wilson might be facing.
Well, it is, but it's even worse because at least New England had the chance to sign Cam – and when you looked at the financial obligation on your team, you thought, well, they're paying them, you know, they're guaranteeing him this much. There is not another quarterback on the roster that's making more money than him. And so for that reason, he's most likely going to be there. And the difference is, you know, for Russell Wilson, it's like, let's just look at some of the scenarios. Again, Pittsburgh. Like, one, I don't think Pittsburgh's going to say, hey, you're for sure our starter, when they, you know, the Kenny Pickett experience isn't really that far along. So I think there's that situation. When you look at Atlanta, you say, okay, well, there are other guys in Atlanta that they've invested in some. So if you don't play great, then you're only making 1.1 on veteran minimum. Like, they can cut you with no recourse. Or they can bench you with no recourse. So I just don't know. I'm going to be shocked if he decides to do it. So do I think Russell Wilson is one of the best 32 quarterbacks on the planet? I absolutely do. Do I think that he will sign up for playing for league minimum when it's not going to impact him making more? He basically is saying, I'm going to bet on myself this year for a longer-term deal after that. But he's 35 years old, and he hasn't played well in 2 years.
Yeah, so his clock is ticking, and it's ticking very fast. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's almost at the end of his NFL playing career. Now, before we get you out of here, Tim, a lot, I think, will be made. A lot will be done before the draft. And Justin Fields, and the only reason I'm asking about Justin Fields is because I think – that, and it seems like things have slowed down, the talks have slowed down on where he could possibly go, you know, trades, what they want, Chicago wants for him. It seems like it slowed down a little bit, but we know we'll pick it back up eventually. But I'm asking you about him because I think ultimately, if he is dealt before the draft, it will affect potentially what the Titans can do at that seventh pick, because now you take one team out of the equation that needs a quarterback.
Oh, there's no question about it. And it felt to me like, well, wait a second. Maybe he's not moving. I feel like 3 weeks ago, he's definitely out of there. I still think that he's out of there, because I think when you hear Ryan Poles talk, I just don't feel like you talk like that about somebody that's going to be your starting quarterback next year that's still a very young player. So, yeah, I think that that happens. I think what happens, you know, kind of in the Kirk Cousins situation, I think that will impact the draft quite a bit, because whether it's, you know, whether it's the Patriots or whether it's, you know, some of those teams that seem like they're maybe a little further back, maybe out of, you know, the conversation in terms of, you know, whether it's the Giants, you know, whether they're in the quarterback mix or not. And then you also look at places and you say, well, no, like, you need to win. Like, you know, does Mike Tomlin need to win? No, but, like, I think he's at the point now where it's like, look, I feel like I got a pretty good team. Like, we need a different quarterback to get it done. Or if you look at Brian Daboll at the Giants, like, you're in a situation where, like, you probably need to save your job, and a young quarterback that is showing promise is one of the ways you can save your job. So, yeah, I think that, you know, I think the two biggest dominoes to fall in terms of what the draft looks like are Justin Fields, and probably in this order, Justin Fields and Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. And I think where those guys go, I think we'll have a lot to do with the layout of the draft in terms of where quarterbacks end up.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, we look forward to seeing you down the streets of Nashville on your tandem bike.
Just think of the viral possibilities.
If I see you riding down 100, I won't beep loud, okay, Tim? I won't scare you.
Hey, listen, if you see me on 100 on a bike, then you know I've lost my mind. It's not to do that.
Because D-Mace alone drives pretty fast on 100. I know. I get that from pretty good sources.
D-Mace is going to pick up a hitchhiker.
Okay. Well, I've seen D-Mace running in Percy Warner, so I'm just going to say that, like, you know. Hopefully he drives faster than he runs these days.
I've seen him drive. I can guarantee that. No matter how fast he runs, I can guarantee he drives faster than he runs. Tim, appreciate you for stopping by. We'll catch up with you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.